On today's episode of Double Down Trent, we are celebrating the birthday of our very own co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, Aaron, aka the model. So we've got that on the docket tonight, and then we've got plenty of action. We welcome on our insider Coulter, our Patriots expert Hughes, as we've got crossfires left and right. Last week, we said all you need to do to win is to fade the Jets and the Cowboys. Well, what do? They go out and cover both their games last week. So this week, we're looking for winners. We've got a lot of action. There's plenty of really good games on the docket. We've got Josh Allen versus Kyler Murray in what looks to be a great game. We're also talking Seahawks versus the Rams. And not to mention, we've got College Game Day at Augusta. That's right, it's Masters weekend in the fall. I don't know what more you could ask for as a sports fan. We're talking everything, including throwing out a few golfers you might want to put some bets down. So stay tuned for episode 86 of Double Down Trent.
Double Down Trent, you might want to tune in. Talking gambling and sports, predicting who might win. Pop culture to movies, let's start up the combo. Ryan and Aaron, man versus the motto. Keep it authentic and it's always live. So competitive, so you know it's always hype. Make sure you subscribe, trust you don't want to miss. Going all in here on Double Down Trent. Hey, yeah, Double Down Trent, let's go.
This is Double Down Trent.
All right, welcome to Double Down Trent, the podcast where two elementary school buddies are talking sports, gambling, and pop culture. My name is Ryan. I'm your co-host as always. Joining us tonight, my co-host, Mr. Model Aaron. How are you doing tonight, my friend?
Birthday boy. I'm doing okay. I'm excited to get into week 10. We are in the thick of the NFL season. I'm looking to bounce some ideas off of all you guys and figure out which way is up and which way is down, because I'm feeling like, things have been a little rough the last couple of weeks and I need to get my bearings again.
Yeah, that's right. Big birthday celebration. 30, what? Do I want to tell the audience?
30 something. I don't remember at this point.
We've lost track. Now, I just want to give a quick little story here. We've been friends now for over 30 years, which is kind of ridiculous. And, you know, we've got the podcast. We call it the Man versus Model segment. And I can really just think of one memory in kindergarten when we had first met. And the recess setup was you had to go finish your assignment, which in kindergarten is just, coloring. You had to color inside the lines. And I just wanted to hustle through and color as fast as I could just so that we could go and play with the Transformer stuff that they had at the recess. So I'm like, come on, Aaron, let's go. We got this. Let's go. And Mr. Model over there sitting very perfectly, methodically coloring inside the lines while I'm watching the Transformers get taken. And to me, that really embodies the man versus model spirit. And now that we're 30-something years old, the hair may be graying, or at least, in your side of things, maybe gone completely.
Yeah.
Could be gone completely. But we're still the man versus model, which is fun. So happy birthday, sir.
Thank you.
We have also got our very own insider, Coulter, on the line. How you doing tonight, Coulter?
Doing great. I'm real pumped for week 10. Can't wait to bury week 9 officially here on the pod and get going into the next slate of games, because I don't want to think about last week anymore.
Yeah. And with that, we're bringing back our insider from the New England Patriots, Bill Hughes, to discuss the state of the Patriots once again. How you doing tonight, Bill?
Doing well. Good to see you guys again, and happy birthday. We'll try and bring the juice tonight. I think we got some good conversation topics, and I'm excited to get into it. Also, hey, stay tuned. Maybe a few Masters plays. You never know. Masters is tomorrow.
Ooh. Get excited. Ooh. Now, Masters that's a tease weekend. That's a serious tease. Let's just jump right back into what we saw last week. And I had said to everybody, if you just fade the Jets and the Cowboys, you would go 15-1. Well, what happens this week? They both cover. So, Hughes, I want to start there, okay? Because Joe Flacco really flirted with knocking your boys off for a little bit. What were your reactions watching that game?
So at first, I think, it started to set in like, oh God, this is actually going to be a game. And I think that, whenever that moment happens with a team like the Jets, you realize that you're not very good. Now, I don't want to totally bag on the Pats necessarily, but at the same time, I feel like there is a certain element to what happened on Monday night that was very emblematic of how Joe Flacco has played against us in the past. I mean, we're talking about a guy who for a number of years was the absolute arch nemesis when he was with Baltimore and really did a lot of damage to the Patriots. So some of those passes he was dropping in there were not surprising. Now, some of the guys were pretty open, so I think, you know, any of us maybe could have hit a few of those touchdown passes. But I mean, I think you saw from, again, from the Pats what we've seen all year, which is it's an inconsistent team that doesn't have a lot of offense, but at the same time has a pedigree and has a coaching staff that can put them in positions to win. And you factor in the fact that the Jets looked like they were trying to lose and tank, and that Joe Douglas was asleep in the box. And I think you've got exactly what we saw Monday night, which was just a bizarre, empty stadium. By the way, that stadium is so weird empty. I just want to say, like, they had no crowd noise, or at least maybe I couldn't hear any of it. They were doing some of the Jets chants. It was just a weird environment. But I'm not surprised the Pats won in the field goal at the end, because ultimately that's kind of what happens in the Pats Jets series. No matter how good the Jets maybe can play for three quarters, they're going to lose it in the fourth. So it's kind of a weird game.
It was strange. And Coulter, I want to throw this out there to you. Did you happen to notice in the fourth quarter, the Jets took a 12 men on the field penalty when I believe the Pats were trying to kick a field goal on like fourth and one penalty, Patriots come down, score a touchdown, and all of a sudden you got a game again. Do you think Gase intentionally did that to throw the game?
Well, so first and foremost, it's kind of hard to miss that play. It was like the cherry on top of the ice cream sundae that is the Jets shit season. And just goodbye them. Yeah. If that was an intentional move, then tip of the cap to Adam Gase. That's a chess master right there, if that's what he was planning on doing. I don't really know. That was just awful in the worst ways possible, because I really do feel like the Jets had that game in the bag. I think it was like a 96% win probability at one point, and they just blew it with that 12 men on the field thing. So, yeah, just a garbage classic Jets loss. I was actually, the most shocking stat was that the Jets have never been 0-9 before. I was fascinated to learn that. My dad's a lifelong fan. I had definitely assumed that they'd had multiple 0-10 starts to the year, but I guess it's that rare when someone's this pathetic.
There was another curious play there from a tank perspective when Flacco decided to drop back and throw it 60 yards down the field when they'd been running the ball with pretty good success. And the intermediate pass game, there was like nobody near any receiver at one point in the game for like seven plays in a row. And all of a sudden they come out on like first or second down when they're winning in the fourth quarter, and they just decide to throw the ball deep. There were just some really curious things that happened towards the end of the game.
The time of possession was what, 1 to 14 minutes in that quarter?
I think they had four offensive plays in the fourth quarter.
When you hear that stat, you definitely can say tanking was, I mean, that stat definitely says that tanking, it potentially could exist. It's hard to do in the NFL. Four plays in one quarter.
It's gotta be easier with no fans, though. Like, I mean, there's just no motivation in that game. Like, the Jets don't. Like, if the Jets fans were sitting there boo-birding them, then maybe guys like would actually like, you know, maybe play. I just feel like that whole game, it was like a scrimmage that the Jets were happy to lose because it gets them closer to Trevor Lawrence.
That's a fair point. And I don't want to speak for Jets fans, but I believe that's probably what these fans were thinking, is that they're like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Like, the one team that's going to potentially ruin us from getting Trevor Lawrence is the Patriots. They must have been freaking out.
Yeah. Well, and it wasn't very nice that Bill Belichick then said the pinnacle moment of his career was leaving the Jets this week. So, I mean, you know, it's kick them while they're down, I guess. And the Jets fans, you know, that can't be nice to hear. But again, if Trevor Lawrence is waiting in your future, what do you care? I mean, again, at the end of the day, I mean, or Fields, like whatever direction that ends up going, I think it's going to be a very interesting debate for the draft next year, who goes one. But like, again, if you're like sitting in the catbird seat and you're like, okay, if we lose and take a few more lumps, what's the matter? We're the Jets.
That's true. Yeah. I think the other big game that was, at least from a shocking standpoint, was the Saints and Bucks game, at least to me. You know, we were all talking the Bucks look great. Brady won this divorce. And then the Saints come back. Now, they've won both games against the Bucks this year, and they absolutely destroyed them. Coulter, I don't even know what to make of that. Are the Saints better than we thought, or they just have the Bucks number?
I think it's much more of the latter. Not that the Saints are necessarily bad, but I think we have to remember this, and we pointed it out on the pod a couple times, but like, this is a team that plays really well in October and November. They get hot, similar to New England, actually. They take the first month of the year off, and they come on stronger in October and November. And you have to remember that when you're handicapping these games in the middle of the season, that this Saints team is different than the team that we saw maybe in weeks 2, 3, 4, when they were a little bit lackluster. And yeah, Breeze doesn't have a lot of juice on his arm, but that offense still gets up and down the field. and the defense is motivated. I think there is a mismatch, though. I couldn't identify it watching the game, but there is a strategic advantage that the Saints have over the Bucs because they've really dominated this franchise over the last 5 to 6 years. Similar, I think I said it last week, or at least the one I brought up a lot, is that Arizona and Niners one where there's that similar connection. So it's interesting with these division games, you get to see the rematch. And when there's a 2-0, you know, and there's a sweep and you win both, there's definitely you lean closer, or even if there's two covers, you lean to the theory that there is some sort of advantage between divisional opponents. And I think that the Saints definitely have that over the Bucs.
I was going to say, you know, the one thing I noticed, and I want to ask you because you may have gotten some firsthand experience. This is our first game with Antonio Brown on the Bucs, and from what we know, Brady kind of, you know, maneuvered to get him in here. Do you think Tom was forcing, trying to get the ball to AB here? And do you think that had a negative effect on their offense?
So actually, I'm glad that you're going to segue into a wide receiver that I think actually had a huge impact on the game. But I don't think it was as much Antonio Brown. I do think Michael Thomas being back was a clear comfort blanket for the Saints and for what the Saints are trying to do. I do think AB is going to be an interesting fit for the Bucs and how they, you know, are able to get him in there. But at the same time, I do think I think the Saints have a better coach. I mean, I'm not an anti-Bruce Arians guy, and I'm not going to run down Bruce Arians, but I do think Sean Payton can coach circles around Bruce Arians.
For sure.
I couldn't agree more with that. Yeah, we didn't talk about that last week, and I wish we had fleshed it out more in real time. You might have been on Saints in our pool, honestly, guys. I don't know, but I was on the Bucks like an idiot, and I wish I'd talked about the coaching mismatch a little bit there.
Yeah, I got the Saints. It was one of my rare victories in the pool. It was tough. Now, Mr. Model, I got one for you here, and this is my selfish, you know, talking about the Giants here, because we got to win against the Washington football team, and I love when we play the Washington football team. I don't know what it is, but the Giants have their number. Danny Dimes, 4-0 in his career against the Washington football team. Against all other teams, he is 1-16. I mean, can we just play them every week?
Yeah, I wish for you guys. That would be nice.
I will say, though, what I saw from that game was at least encouraging, because from what we've seen all year, everyone's saying Washington's front, you know, defensive line, they're nasty, they're going to dominate that game. The Giants O-line, and they played a lot of rookies, they actually held their own. And what you saw was the Giants run the ball and run it down their throats. Hughes, you know, I've been down on the Giants. Is there reason for a little bit of optimism here?
I mean, they play hard. I don't know if it's hard, if it's like an NFL thing to say that, but I think that there's guys on that team that clear. I think, you know, and Coulter talked about the defense last week. Like, there's guys that care about playing for that team, playing for that coaching staff. I think it'll come together. I don't want to say that Danny Dimes isn't the answer. I don't really know. I like him personally in terms of like watching him play his style. I like that he can move a little bit. I will say, though, that like they're also going to be in a position where maybe there's a quarterback available in this draft if they're somewhere in that conversation. But I do think, like, I think they're going to win games. I was on them last week. They were like a 2-point dog. Didn't seem to make any sense to me. I think they're clearly the better team. But at the end of the day, I think there is hope. I think, again, they're playing at a way where they seem to be getting better. And they play a physical brand of football that they want to play. Like, that's what their coaching staff. I mean, I think that's what the front office has tried to put together. And so, I mean, I'd be optimistic. I think the O-line is obviously still going to be an issue, just given, you know, where things are right now. But yeah, I'd be optimistic on the Giants. I'm bullish on them. I mean, I don't know how. I haven't looked at the schedule the rest of the way, but again, the division, there's not like a lot of hard matchups in that division, so they're going to get a few. They're going to get a few nice warm up games.
I actually have their schedule up right now, because that's what I was taking a peek at to see what they have the rest of the way. Let's just see how many games you think they win out of their next, seven games. So like Philadelphia Eagles is this week.
I think they're going to win that game, to be honest with you.
All right. They go into bye week 11. Then they're at Cincinnati.
Okay, that's winnable.
Possible, yep. At Seattle.
Ooh, that's a loss.
Yeah.
Week 14, they are home against Arizona Cardinals.
That's a loss.
Week 15, they are home against Cleveland Browns.
It could be a competitive game. We'll see where the Browns are at that point.
Yeah. That could be a loss, though.
Today, but yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That Browns defense isn't very good. Let's not forget. I know that Windstorm game that was 16-6 is throwing us off the scent. Last time I saw the Browns play in a normal weather game, that D looked atrocious. So.
Yeah.
Well, you can, I mean, you can say the same about Seattle, too. But, I mean, that game on the road is a lot trickier. But, yeah, Cleveland, I don't know. That one stood out as a game the Giants could potentially win.
Yeah, I feel like that Cleveland's like a peaks and valley team. Like, it depends where you catch them. If you catch them at the top, then all of a sudden, you know, they're riding high and they don't think that anybody can beat them and you can get them. If they're low and they realize that they got to get a win, it's a gritty enough team. I think they can get wins. And I, again, another coach that I really like in terms of what he's done with kind of progressing that team and kind of getting them. I don't know if Baker's the answer for what they're going to what they want to do, but I do think that they know they have an identity, kind of like I think the Giants are developing. And I think that that's important when you play in the NFL. I think there's, you know, again, there's a lot of guys right now playing for coaches that probably aren't going to be there next year. And, you know, I think that matters.
Yeah.
I think if you look at, like, the Jags was a great example last week, too, of, like, a quarterback. Did anybody see that coming? No. I mean, I think I laid so much money against the Jags.
We just sit on three straight games where the division team that was getting points was the winner in all three of those games.
Yep.
Crazy.
I mean, maybe that's just the simple formula. Like, when I'm looking at the Giants game, like, not to discount all the stuff that you guys were just saying, but it's simple. It's a simple math play that I just got wrong. Like, you take the hook, you get the points and the hook in a divisional game, you take the dog. That's what I got wrong on that one. I'm going to push back on a couple of things, though. Football team could have won and covered this game without the QB injury. They were down to their third string quarterback, Smith, who I don't think has any gusto left. You know, I know it's a great story, but let's be honest, this guy's he's a fraction of what he used to be. This team carries three QBs, which is actually interesting because it says a lot that they don't have a good one to play with, so they have to carry three. The depth is not there. It wasn't there at the beginning of the year. It's even worse now. So I don't think football team is great. And Kaz, you said it earlier, they're 0-4 against the Giants. And what are the Giants? Not good.
Not a good team.
Football team is not good. Let's not overreact here a little bit here. I think you're missing the quarterback thing. The injury, I was watching that game. I was stunned when Smith hit McLaurin. I was like, what? I didn't think Smith had that kind of a play left in his ability. So, I mean, it's sensational, but you have to admit that the Giants almost lost to this team in a situation where I know Smith is a motivating factor in that locker room, but man, I just fear with his injury history that I just don't think he's there as a quarterback. And I'm sorry, you know what? The Giants were coming in that game highly motivated because they knew it was one of the only games they could win on their schedule, as we just went over. And they came in pretty hot. They had that final drive against Tampa Bay that got called off on that bullcrap, you know, penalty. That team was fully motivated, fired up. I completely missed all those factors. And quite frankly, not to go back to the quarterback thing, when you are trying to handicap a football team this year, you have to take that into account. You have Smith, and if Smith gets hurt, guess who's coming in the game? The guy who doesn't study the playbook. Therefore, I'm all fading on football team, or at least I will try to fade them as much as I can. I don't want to get too locked into stuff because I think that's been a big problem of mine this season, but like, you have to factor that in, that if Smith goes down, and that's highly probable, they're going back to a guy who couldn't study the playbook, a guy who they've intentionally tried not playing. I fade football team. I got to fade the Giants. You have to remember that Monday night game. Giants were motivated, divisional game. That's my breakdown there.
Yeah, it's fair. But now all of a sudden I'm in the mindset of like, hey, if we beat the Eagles, all of a sudden that division is very winnable. And this could be a 6-10 or a six-win team that wins the division.
Watch that Thursday night football game, though. The Giants were able to keep that lead and get ahead in that game because they were running the football down Philly's throat, correct?
Yeah.
Gallman's looking good.
Yep.
I don't see that happening again. So it's like we just talked about these divisional advantages. That's not one that I see. I don't see Giants run offense versus Philly's run defense as a divisional advantage that they're going to have again. I think that was an anomaly. And I just think that the Eagles are going to stop that run game. And then it's all on Jones to make plays. I like the Eagles pass rush and I like their cornerbacks a little bit more than I like Jones making plays. I don't know. I could be wrong.
That's fair. Go ahead.
Not to pile on here, but,
and I like the hook, by the way. I'm taking the Giants, but I'm just saying that I like I'm just like, in general for the season, I don't think we should read too much into the Giants or the football team. I just don't think either of them are good.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And that's where I think Philly's got getting people back. They've got, I think, four guys that are going to start or five back in the last 2 weeks. They're coming off a bye. I think this is a prime Philly is going to win this game. And I will say, I liked how the Giants played against the football team up until the fourth quarter. And I don't know if it's the play calling or if it's Danny Dimes. That's the piece of it. That's the puzzle piece I can't quite put together. I have convinced myself that I hate Jason Garrett enough that it's his fault that they don't know how to call plays in the fourth quarter, whether they're winning or losing. But at the same time, it does look like Danny plays a little bit different. He's not as loose. Obviously the offensive line is not good if the play calls are predictable, but like they had a chance to ice that game and win that game easy by two touchdowns and they just couldn't do it. They couldn't put them away. And I do think that's just a sign of maybe not a good team. And I'm not sold on the Eagles, but I think the Eagles from a talent perspective are going to bring some guys back. I don't think Carson Wentz is totally done. And I think if they give him some weapons, I mean, the guys he's been throwing to have been, I don't want to say substandard, but with Goddard back, with potentially Jeffrey back, with Rager back, like you got guys that he can maybe spread the ball around to. I obviously I'm a little brainwashed having lived and drank the water here in South Jersey outside of Philadelphia. But I do like the Eagles this week. -3 is the number I had it at.
You got the Schuylkill suds in you there, pal. I don't know, man. This seriously might be a crossfire we might have to deal with.
Let's go.
I was going to say, let's just jump past the rest of week 9 and just get right into week 10. I feel like we're ready to rock and roll.
Let's do it then. Let's just do it then. Okay. But we got some things we got to talk about. Okay. Because there's a lot of good matchups. I think we got to go back at least and go over some of the man versus model stats first. But there's some stuff on the docket here for week 10, Mr. Model, that I really like here. So you got Herbert versus Tua, and obviously, you know, the quarterback don't play each other, but that's the marquee matchup. You got Josh Allen versus, you've got the Seahawks and the Rams. You got Joe Burrow going up against the Steelers. We've got a good week of games, Mr. Model. So why don't you go through? Let's start picking the games we got for the Double Down Trent Challenge.
Yep. So for the upcoming week, we have 5 games slotted in. I tried to pick the best 5. They're probably debatable. The first game I have, we have the New England Patriots home against the Baltimore Ravens. Baltimore is a visiting team favored at 7.5. Second game, we go out west. Los Angeles Rams are home against the Seattle Seahawks. Los Angeles is a small home favorite at -1.5. Third game, we have Tampa Bay traveling to the Carolina Panthers in Charlotte. Tampa Bay is going to be the favorite there at -4.5. The fourth game, Arizona Cardinals are home against those pesky Buffalo Bills that cost me some money last week. The Arizona Cardinals are, to me, a surprising home favorite here against the America or AFC East leading team. Arizona favored by 2.5. And then the last game, we go to Monday night. Those Chicago Bears that Cazalet just loves and is dear to his heart. They are home. They are a home dog, bringing those Minnesota Vikings in. Minnesota's favored by 2.5. Those are the 5 this week.
And before we reveal the standings, let me just put this incredible stat out there for the listeners. As you may know, we are in this pool where we have to make a pick every week, every game against the spread. Not only did I get the Bears wrong again, and now I'm 0-9 picking the Bears, but listen to this stat. The Bears, the Seahawks, and the Vikings. I am 2-23. That is pathetic. I don't even know what I need. I need somebody just to tell me what to pick in those games because I clearly can't do it. Just clearly can't do it.
That's impressive.
I thought you were going to dip into the Megan Cazalet bag of tricks.
I know. Now I'm doing it this week. I'm doing it this week because I believe Mr. Model, she's still got the lead, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Kudos to Megan Cazalet. She is still the leader in the clubhouse, has been the leader for weeks, if not maybe all year. She is number one with 27 points, doing really well. Hannibal had a fantastic week this past week. I think he went 4-1 with his picks. So he climbed back into second place. He's at 26 points. And then in third, it's still close, but we have you, the man, Ryan, at 24 points, still hovering around. Just wanted to give one shout out. We have a newcomer this week. We have a number of people who are continuing to do it, but Shep Dog is a new entry, just starting up. So I'm going to make sure that I call out people who are joining late and continuing to pick with us through the rest of the year.
Nicely done, Megan. This week, the Bears are playing the Vikings, so I have to win one of those games unless they result in a tie. So, Megan, pick those games for me and send them over my way because I can't do it. It's just bad. Now, let's go in and review. We had a lot of action last week, boys. We had some crossfires. So, Mr. Model, why don't you go and let us know how we did in the crossfire bets.
I'm trying to actually forget how we did in the crossfire bets. So, number one, Hughes had taken New England.
No. He had the Bills.
Thank you. He had the Bills against my Seattle Seahawks. Unfortunately for me, the Bills not only covered, but won outright. So that one stung a little bit. And then for the second crossfire bet, we had Arizona playing Miami. I was all over Arizona, as were a couple of us. I think Hughes and Coulter, all going up against Casale. And, Miami just came through and actually won that game outright as well. So that one sucked.
That one felt good. But Hughes, you won a really good bet, and you made a really good case on that one. So talk about what you saw in that Bills-Seahawks game.
I will say, maybe it's growing up in New England and seeing the Bills, twice a year against the Pats, but also getting a decent amount of their regional games. And recently too, I think there's just this trend about the Bills that they they're kind of like I talked about the Browns. They're like a peaks and valleys team. Like they, when they've been down. So like everybody's like, oh, the Bills are dead. Like Josh Allen's not what we thought he was. Like they're a good team. They have a good coach. They have good players. So like there's an inevitability to them bouncing back and playing well. And I think that the Pats are an interesting, like that game when we talked about it, everybody thought they were going to just roll and crush and kill the Pats. And I think that that's one of those things where that this Bills team is not good enough to do that. But then you put them as an underdog. It's like that's where they belong. It's like the city of Buffalo, the way that they play football, Josh Allen coming from where he came from, no one giving him the respect he deserved in the draft. It's like when they're high, they don't know how to play at those expectations. But when they're low, they're real comfortable and they can come out. And I just think it's that type of team. They're scrappy, they're gritty. And I think, when their back's against the wall, they're the type of team you want to go with. And I think, again, here's my thing. We've talked about not making commitments to like trends. I may bet Buffalo as a dog the rest of the way, because I think that's what they are. When they're a dog, they like that identity. They play to that identity. When they're a favorite, they get a little top heavy and they just don't seem like they know how to be the favorite. I don't know. We'll see what happens, but that's kind of what my analysis of that game was. And also, I think the Seahawks were destined for a weird game. Like they were coming east. It was a weird start time. I mean, obviously we talked about the start time. We talked about a lot of different things. And again, like the Seahawks defense is not great. I mean, I think that they've played great at different times against bad offenses, but they're not a great, I mean, the Pats, well, we talked about that. The Pats put up 30 on them. Like it's not a great defense. I think that again, they're a work in progress. I think they know how to play defense. But I also think there's opportunities there to get after them. But you saw the resolve in the Seahawks, too. They did not give up, and they were fighting tooth and nail. And they've got some – again, I think Russell Wilson is the MVP already. I think it's crazy to think that. But at the same time, I don't know who's played as well as consistently as he has. So that's kind of what I saw. I was happy to see the Seahawks because I'm on the Seahawks hard this week. Once we get to week 10, I'm the max bet button for the Seahawks, whatever we need to do.
It was a good handicap. And Coulter, I want to ask your opinion about this one because I watched that game really closely and I noticed the Bills just, they completely threw out the playbook. They're like, you know what? We understand that Seattle is really good against the run. We're just going to throw the ball down their throats. And they came out lighting up the skies. Josh Allen had an incredible game. I think that's the blueprint now to beat the Seahawks, right? Just beat them in the air.
Yeah, they didn't even run the football at all, right? I didn't see the stats total, but I mean, I was watching that game on the red zone, and it just looked like the Bills' offense could score at will through the air. It definitely did not appear that way the previous week when I watched them play the Patriots. So it's something I wish I had known going into the Seahawks game that I'd be seeing a completely different pass offense for Buffalo. But yeah, we alluded to it last week. It was a bad schedule spot for Seattle. Very interesting that we've seen that now happen twice in back-to-back weeks. We've got a couple other opportunities to try it this week, but I don't know if it's at the 1 a.m. I think the Chargers are at 4 with the Dolphins. The NFL didn't do us any favors there. But that's another trend that I wanted to point out about that Bills game. I kind of like what Hughes was saying about the Bills having an identity as an underdog. I would caution, though, that I just think that Seattle's D being as bad as it is. I mean, you referenced the New England game. So like, let's just take it all with a grain of salt. Like maybe the game itself is just one of those weird outliers because the Seahawks D is that bad. And like, that's the big takeaway.
Mm. It's a huge takeaway. I mean, it's something to watch the rest of the year. Now to pivot to the other crossfire game, the Dolphins and the Cardinals, another fantastic football game. We were down on two after his week one performance. And I mean, obviously how could you not? They really limited the playbook on him, I think intentionally, but this week they opened it up and I was the only one on the Dolphins. And granted, that game could have flipped in either direction, multiple different ways, but we got an epic battle of Kyler versus Tua. And I am really excited. I mean, you saw these two offenses go back and forth. We knew the Dolphins had a really good defense, but then it's impossible, it feels like, to stop Kyler Murray. Coulter, we talked about it. We were saying Flores might be able to stop him there, but man, Kyler's a force to be reckoned with this year.
Kyler is great on the ground. He is, I think, what is he, third in the NFL in rushing yards, which is just fascinating. Like, this guy's going to end up breaking rushing records. I think this was my most painful loss of the week, not only because I lost the crossfire to you. It's just that I don't know. I looked at it so long and hard and just stayed on the Cardinals, even though we had talked about the Flores angle. And I think that was really true. I think he is a great defensive coach. I like their defensive backs that they have in Miami. That defense is good. And Tua can throw. So mystery solved there. You know what I'm saying? And travel, you know, most notably here, another big thing isn't an issue for Miami, which makes them a play on team for me. Cause if they can win in San Fran, they can win in Arizona. That's great. And the NFC West isn't an issue for Miami. They're 3-1 against this division. I love that about this team. They believe they can play with anybody. They've got a coach who is a genius. We'll get to them later in the pod. I really like Flores. I like what I'm seeing from the Dolphins. I was just incorrect on that one.
It happens. It's okay. I'll take you guys' money. Go ahead.
I took some lumps on that, too. And just to add just real quick on that, I also was a little disappointed in Cliff Kingsbury in the fourth quarter. I didn't think that the coaching on the other side.
You're right.
It just didn't see. Yeah. I didn't get it. I didn't know what they were trying to do. I think Flores is proven that. And it's funny. Someone talked about the obviously his last Pats team when he was the defensive coordinator was a surprise to a lot of people that they were as successful as they were. And I think there are a lot of people that are now willing to attribute some of that to him and obviously what he's been able to do in Miami. And I just think he was a superior coach in that matchup when the game was on the line. And I think it just became very clear. Just seemed like it was so obvious that in the fourth quarter that like, oh God, like the Dolphins are going to easily win this game.
Well, like you guys said, Kingsbury has been, this entire season has been aggressive. They've been really creative with their play calling. And then all of a sudden you saw in the fourth quarter, they're not going for it on fourth down. They're kicking field goals. They're playing really conservative at home.
How can you not go for it when you've got an automatic first down? You have a cheat code. I mean, what Tom Brady was up the middle for New England for two decades, that's what Kyler is on the outside for Arizona. He can just, as long as he can get past that defensive end, he can gain 4 or 5 yards per carry, if not 7 or 8. I mean, it's unfair to the opposing defense.
Very strange.
I did hate. Okay, I hated the way that was coached. That's a great point from Hughes. That's what made that even worse. It was that they had to miss the field goal too, right? Didn't it was like inches short too?
A 48-yarder, which was strange.
Week nine. That week nine. Hey, you know, right there.
Sometimes you got to get lucky when you're 2-23 picking these other teams. You need a little luck to go your way. And I got it this weekend. So let's move ahead to week 10. Different week. Okay. We had two bad weeks of picks in a row. Hughes, you've been hot though, man. So take it away. You make your first pick here for week number 10.
I teased it earlier. I mean, I don't know if anybody who sat at a slot machine, when you got that max bet button, but I'm hitting the max bet button on Seattle +2. I don't see how this team doesn't bounce back and get a win here. I like them. I mean, again, like I just said, I like the money line. If you want to go both ways, that's an old. I don't want to give a shout out to Dave Portnoy, but it's an old Dave Portnoy trick. Take the points and the money line if you like them both. Why not? You can win them both. It's not a hard bet. Yeah. I'm on Seattle big time.
All right, Colton, what do you think?
I'm not going to pull a crossfire here. My lean was originally to the Rams just because they're coming off the bye week and Seattle's coming back across country. And I think the Rams have had a pretty good edge against Seattle, actually, talking about divisional edges. This is a divisional game where the history actually favors the Rams. with that said, Hughes is on fire, and I'm not going to bet against Russell Wilson because although my initial pick was the Rams, I think I'm going to end up looking at this long enough, and I'm just going to see Goff versus Wilson, 2-point spread. Home field means absolutely nothing in COVID. It doesn't mean anything really in LA. And I just think Seattle has the best players. Oh, and actually I should add in, which is why I'm kind of siding closer to Seattle now, and I'm not going to crossfire here, is Kupp has some serious issues, injuries. So they might be down Cooper Kupp for the Rams. So that could be a big problem for them.
Okay, fair enough. Mr. Model, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't have much of an opinion on this. Right now I'm currently on Seattle. They've been my team that I'm holding a future ticket on, so I'll be rooting for them. I'm really hoping that their defense can improve. So right now, DVOA, they're 24th ranked overall. That defense has just been god-awful. Got to really think that they're going to hopefully contain Goff better than what they may have in the past. Goff certainly isn't going to be the best quarterback they see all year. I'm going to be rooting for that. I'd like to see them cover the and maybe just hopefully win this game outright.
Okay. I'm going to go Tony Kornheiser here, boys, in the video. I'm going to put on my glasses here, and I've actually did some research, okay? How about this? Seattle, they are 23-10-2 against the spread as an underdog with Russell Wilson at quarterback. Having said that, Hughes, I'm going to crossfire you here, baby. I'm going to take the other side of the action. I'm on the Rams here. Okay, hear me out on this one. The Rams are 4-1 against Seattle, okay, with Sean McVay as head coach. And I did a lot of research on this one, okay? The Rams have been able to score at will against the Seahawks. Okay, here you go. Points per game. The Rams against the Seahawks, they're averaging 32 points under the McVay era. Against all other teams, 27. Yards per game, 464. All other teams, 390. Offensive efficiency, 86. All others, 61. And the last one, QBR, 73 for my boy Goff, 55 against all others. They're coming off a bye. Seattle's already banged up, especially in the secondary. I think McVay is going to find ways to throw the ball all over this team, just like we saw the Bills did, and they're going to do it at will. So I'm going to crossfire you here.
I accept your crossfire, and I want to shout out to anybody listening. If you want to bet this game, the natural compromise is bet Seattle first half, money line, and bet the over for the full game. Because honestly, I think my play on the Rams, I think they sleepwalk through the first quarter. I do not like Jared Goff. I think Jared Goff stinks. I've said this before. I don't like him. I don't think he's a good quarterback. Whether he can tear up the
Seattle. But isn't part of their success that he's good when they're scripted early in games?
I just think, again, off the bye, I don't know. Because their coach, that coaching matchup is tough for me to say that sides with Seattle. Because, I mean, I think McVay knows, and with an extra week is tough. I don't know. I just think Seattle bounces back. I don't like Goff. And I accept your crossfire. But again, if you guys want to compromise out there, Seattle first half over for the game. Because I do think there's going to be some points in this one. There's going to be points.
I think, I think that's a fair compromise too, but I did some research on this one, boys. I came to do my homework, like Mr. Model, in honor of his birthday.
I was going to say you were not the man there; you were the model.
Yes, sir.
That was fantastic. I was clapping. I was like, I mentioned the divisional advantage the Rams had. I didn't do the homework on it though. That's very impressive stuff.
It felt good. And you know, I see what you're saying, Hughes. It is a good bounce back opportunity for Seattle. But I got to take my stats here. I got to go with my research.
Yeah, and I will say I'm siding a little bit with a future bet I have too on the Rams under win total, and it has not worked out so far this year. So ooh, I may be wrong again.
An ulterior motive, I like it.
This is a weird little thing too. If you want to look at the Rams schedule, and I don't know if this means anything, maybe we could just do a biopsy on it next week. But like, have we seen the true Rams offense in more than 6 weeks? They played the Giants D very close game where they weren't motivated to gain margin. And that was kind of the Giants D's coming out party. They've been great since. So I think the Giants D is actually in the top 20, top 16 of the league. You have football team. They're desperate to keep the game close. That's a tough defensive line. Niners, same exact thing, motivated to keep the game close. Bears, ditto. Dolphins on the road. We haven't seen the Rams play a team that's just friggin' terrible on defense like Seattle is in a very long time. Last time we saw them, they played the Bills. They scored 32, scored 37 against a crappy Eagles defense in week two. I don't know. I mean, what is the Rams offense? And we will only know until after this game. But I mean, it could be a sleeping giant here. They've played some really tough defenses against teams that simply knew if they allowed 20 points, they were going to lose. So they were desperate to keep the games tight.
Yeah, it's fair points because I don't know what we see from them either. Really playing against bad teams, so who knows? We'll see what happens this weekend.
Add the first half over too, because clearly it's going to be a bloodbath. So just take the over. If you want to make money on this game, it sounds like it's just take the overs.
Smash. Right? Yeah, I mean, it seems like the Rams' offense has to be motivated to want to just get points.
Yeah,
even if they lose the game, if they score 35, they'll have to feel good, right? Like finally, like they're stretching out of a long slumber.
You'd think so. Okay, Mr. Birthday Boy, Mr. Model, why don't you give us your first pick?
Yeah, I've been having an internal debate about which way I go here, and I had two games in mind, and I think I'm there. For my non-key pick, I am taking Baltimore -7.5 against those New England Patriots. Here is why. I think the Patriots are just an absolute dumpster fire. When I look at DVOA, they are the 31st defensive team in defense. They are 24th in offense. I know that there were some good quotes coming out of Lamar Jackson this week about how defenses have been calling the offense plays. And I think that's going to be something that really lights a fire under them and gets them headed in the right direction. Right now, Baltimore's offense is ranked 23rd in DVOA. I think that's going to significantly improve across the rest of the year. I think that they cover here. I think they cover handily. I just think that there's good matchups across the board. I like Baltimore in this spot. I'm going to take them -7.5.
Okay, Hughes, I'm going to let you collect your thoughts here. I'm going to kick it to Coulter first. Coulter, you pointed this out today that defenses were basically calling the plays for the Ravens. What do you think about Mr. Model's pick?
I'm in full agreement with him, and honestly, this is my third. I kept it off my two here. This would have been my third play if we went three deep. And the only reason why I really didn't go with it is the Lamar comments is a little difficult. And also, I've been awful with the Patriots, if you guys haven't noticed. I switched on to them against San Francisco at the last minute in Week 7, one of the worst picks of the year for me because of the Belichick factor. Then I faded them in Week 8. Switched on to them in Week 9 because of the Flacco factor. I am just all over the place with New England. So I'm just going to stay away from putting them as one of my two on the podcast here. I will take Baltimore in the picks pool, of course. But I don't know. I agree with the model here. Baltimore recovered and won a road game last week despite losing their best offensive lineman and dealing with COVID throughout the week. The Patriots basically lost to the Jets. They lost to the Jets. I know the scoreboard said otherwise, but they lost in my mind. That was a mental loss. The fact that they were so close to the Jets says it all. And this Patriots team, they're not anywhere close to the Colts, as I just alluded to. I've been on the pod hating on this team. The Colts are superior to the Patriots, and the Ravens kicked the shit out of them, dominated them for the last three quarters in that game. So I'll take Baltimore for sure.
Okay. All right. Hughes. What do you got?
All right. So I don't have a high level of confidence in this game only because the Ravens are due. And so it scares me that the Ravens are due for a breakout game on offense. The Pats are a sieve on defense for the most part. And the Pats can't really score a lot of points. So I would love to crossfire this just for the sake of the crossfire. And I do think the 7.5 is enough points where I think you can feel comfortable taking the Pats, just thinking maybe you can get, a late cover or, some type of, again, a continuation of the Lamar trend. But again, I just feel like he's due. I apologize. I do not play for the Patriots, but at the same time, as a native son of New England, it is part of who I am. The defense is not great. The offense is not great. We've never been good against running quarterbacks. And so I do think that the Ravens win this game and most likely cover and maybe with ease. This could be one of those games where people are doing a little grave dancing, I guess we'll call it.
That's fair. The 7.5, the hook kind of scares me on this one, but I do see what everyone's saying. And I'm in agreement here. I just see Lamar running all over the Pats this week. They look dead in the water against the Jets. And I know the Ravens and the Pats have a history, and they've exchanged very good games in the past, but this is not that year. I can't see this game being close because, like you all said, Lamar—
But Kaz, another good point. You just hit the nail on the head. did they exchange a good game last year, or did the Ravens kick the living shit out of New England?
Yeah.
This is a team that might, since they've changed their offensive philosophy, maybe they just have New England's number now, this Lamar Jackson offense. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. You're right. In history, they have played close games, but the game I watched last year, top 10 biggest mismatch by far. And it's not me being anti-Pats. By far, they were totally outmatched, and Belichick had no answer to that run offense.
I agree 1,000%. I just feel like this Ravens team this year is different than last year's team. There's something missing, but like they just don't look like the same team sometimes. And Lamar, I think part of it's Lamar doesn't look confident, and I do think he gets that swag or confidence, whatever.
He has to get his back. Yeah, Joe Flacco just threw all over them. If you're a Baltimore receiver. You might as well get off. No, Blake, if you're Marquise Brown and you see the kid Mims from Baylor and Crowder and Perriman going off against New England, and you play New England this weekend and you can't do the same thing, if you're Marquise Brown, you're not worth a squirt of piss to me. I mean, if Jamison Crowder and Perriman are doing it to New England, why can't you with Lamar Jackson? You have an advantage on the running side. Belichick has to go all in on the run. The pass should be there constantly. Brown should have 200 yards receiving, I would think.
One quick thing, maybe two. Hollywood Brown has been terrible this year.
He's been awful. I mean, how motivated has he have to be to be a dynamite player this week? He has to be. This is a huge showcase. Sunday Night Football.
The other big thing will be does Gilmore play? I got very upset with this Monday night crew. I do not like this Monday night crew. For those out there listening, again, we've talked about their at noon Big Ten ESPN crew that should be doing, Northwestern games, and we've got them on Monday Night Football. But at the same time, like them talking about the defensive secondary issues for the Pats, yeah, they don't have their best player who was also the defending defensive player of the year. Like, it's a different defense. Like, yes, Jackson's good. Yes, I think they've got players that – like, I like both McCourty's. But, like, when you've got Gilmore not in there, it's a different team. He hasn't even played great this year when he has played, but they're still a better defense. If he plays against the Ravens, I think they'll be better than they were against the Jets. And, again, Joe Flacco, he's got our number. I don't know if he signed a deal with the devil or not. But at the same time, like, Joe Flacco – I don't want to compare Joe Flacco – and what he did to the Pats defense, given who was out there and what he's done to us in the past, to this week. But I do think the Ravens get it back. I think Lamar runs wild on us.
The Patriots just moved the needle, man. A lot of talk about the Pats. Love it. All right, Coulter, who's your first pick of the week?
Yeah, I was going to say Monday. Speaking of Monday night crew, I'm going right on to that Monday night game. Ooh. You know what? I've been awful on the pod recently, and I don't know if I'm going to get any better with this pick, but you know what? Come hell or high water, when I first started doing the podcast with you guys, the bread and butter was bad coaching. And this week, I'm just going back to the old formula. Mike Zimmer's a great coach. Matt Nagy is a bad one. Give me the Vikings. Vegas is telling you something. They think the Vikings are better than the Bears, even though it's in Chicago. I know that I'm getting a bad line. I know it's a bad – everything about this is probably take the Bears. But I don't know. I'm just going to take my good coach, and I'm going to fade their bad coach. I don't like what I see from the Bears offense. I don't like Allen Robinson's body language. I don't like that offensive line. I know their defense is great, but I think Dalvin Cook might be just better. You know what? The Ravens defense was great last year, and Derrick Henry shred them to pieces. Sometimes the superior offensive player just emerges. I'll just take the Vikings. I'm a better coach. I'm going to watch that game thoroughly. I'm not going to be rooting for the Bears. I know who I'm going to be rooting for. That's a simple one for me. You're not going to crossfire me, so I'm safe.
You are totally safe on that one. I have a contractual obligation to let the listeners know that I'm 0-9 picking the Bears. I don't even know if it's better for the listeners if I just opt out of this or if I give my honest opinions and you guys just reverse it. So I don't know what's better, but for the record, I am on the Vikings with you. I agree completely. Better coach, better offense, but I like Dalvin Cook. He's been unstoppable, so – take that for what it's worth, listeners, okay? What do you think, Mr. Model?
I don't feel strongly about this game. Currently, I'm on Chicago right now, but I am never one to be a big supporter of Nagy. I think that their defense keeps them in this. I think the total for this game is super low. I think it's something like 44 or something like that. I ended up teasing this game I grabbed Chicago at +3 and teased it up to +9. So, you know, when I think of them, I love them in this spot. But to cover the 2.5 that we have locked into our pools, I'm a little less clear on. Having said that, I am on Chicago in this game. I think they'll keep it close. I'd like to think that Foles plays better, but this might be something that I flip on come Monday morning.
Hughes, I can't be trusted. So what do you think on this game?
Man, the model's got me my brain in a pretzel on this one. I'm on the Vikings. I'm drinking the Dalvin Kool-Aid. I think they've been able to control the game via the run. The interesting thing would be, and I did not do the research, would be to see what the Bears are against the run. Because, if this comes down to a Kirk Cousins game, the Vikings will lose. He's not a good quarterback. I think that they, for whatever reason, are not a – they're a decent defensive team, but they've lost a lot of guys to injury and a lot of guys to different situations. So, man, I'm torn on this, but I'm on the Vikings. I like the 2.5. Again, it's under the – you know, whatever the football number gets you a little bit of – you know, a bargain there. And again, Dalvin Cook has looked so good. And I don't know if it's just him as a one-man wrecking crew, but I was watching some, one of the NFL shows, and they were showing some of the holes. The offensive line is clearly just absolutely crushing people. So
I saw that segment too. And not only is the O-line just dominating, the vision on Dalvin Cook is outrageous. That guy's making cutbacks that just don't seem like they're there, and then he just bursts through. So we'll see.
What if Minnesota gets up in this game? We've done this exercise a few times on the podcast. What if Minnesota gets up in this game 10-0?
Yeah.
Are the Bears coming back in this game? I know the Vikings defense stinks, but like I haven't seen a worse offense than the Bears. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't feel like confident in this. I know it's not like a quote unquote gambling genius play. But I kind of like it. And quite frankly, Joe Public is going to go into the sports book and he's going to see the 5-4 Bears getting 2.5 points. He's going to take the team with a better record. He's going to say, oh, Minnesota, they beat a backup last week. That's the Joe Public angle. I kind of like the F that idea and just go with the team that I think played better last week and who has a better offense.
Now,
like, I just don't see the Bears scoring points.
Can I play contrarian for a hot second here? I believe earlier in the pod, we were talking about these divisional games taking the team getting the points. Does that change your mind at all?
No, because of Matt Nagy. he's the factor here.
Ugh, Matt Nagy.
And I'm willing to admit that I'm making the same mistake I've made in the past 3 weeks, which is like an ego play. But like, I don't see it. I don't see how the Bears, if they get behind in this game, how they can possibly come back. And maybe what I'm not seeing is a defensive touchdown. And when we do this podcast next week and it's Bears won the game 23-17, it's because they had a pick six or something. But like, you can't factor that into a handicap. You can't predict the random turnover turn into a TD. But that's the only way I can see the Bears actually making a wild swing in this game. If they get down, I just think they're done with.
Yeah. All right, Hughes, give us your key pick.
So Buffalo +2.5 is another one I'm on this week. I think the Bills, I feel like it's one of those games where they're going to go in. Everybody's going to be like, oh gosh, like the Cardinals and Kyler. And because the game's in Arizona, is it a 4:30? Is that what we talk about?
It is a 4:05.
4:05. It's one of six games that are late.
Yeah. So I don't know. I like the Bills. I think they keep up the momentum. I think better coach on the Bills side personally, but we'll see. But I'm on the Bills +2.5. Again, I would consider a little bit of a money line parlay there if you like it with Buffalo and Seattle. I think you can make some really good money.
Ooh, feeling saucy. This was going to be my six calls to Nikki game. I can't get a read on this one. I want to take Buffalo right now in our pool. I'm sitting on Buffalo getting the points just because I think them getting points here is a better look. But I've been all over Arizona. I like them a lot. Obviously, I picked against them last week, but I really like what they're doing. I struggle to see why their offense can't do what we just saw last week from Seattle in like the second half. I think you got in Kyler Murray, he's a more athletic Russell Wilson, and he's obviously not as good of a passer, but I feel like that offense can put up points there. So my head is in a pickle. I'm sitting on the Bills right now with you. So that's where I stand. And, you know, Mr. Model, what do you got on that game?
I have nothing to say about this game. I don't know. I currently am too, also sitting on Buffalo +2.5. They burned me last week, so I think that's one of the reasons I'm coming back to them. The market hasn't changed all that much on this game. Right now I'm seeing lines that are either Buffalo plus two or Buffalo still at plus 2.5. You know, this is something that I'll probably monitor between now and Sunday and then make a decision.
Coulter, what do you got?
You know why we're so confused about this game is because Arizona's run defense looks really good and the Bills' run offense was non-existent. So there's two factors in this game that we just have no read on because A, the Bills didn't run last week, and B, you know, it looks like the Cardinals are really prepared to stop the run. But what if it's just Josh Allen again throwing it 50 times? And that's kind of where you land on the handicap. Do you want to bet with Josh Allen throwing the ball 50 times plus 2.5, or do you want to fade that? I'm on Buffalo right now, but the more I talk through it, I kind of don't like that situation for Buffalo on the road with Allen having to throw it as much as he did last week. It worked against Seattle. I don't necessarily know if it will work against Arizona. What I do like about Buffalo and why I originally stuck with them is I feel like they're getting healthy. They have both their backs. They've got all their receivers. So the offense is kind of all there. The offensive line, I think I mentioned last week, was getting healthy too. And that, I think that helped them against Seattle. So, right now I'm on Buffalo, but the real reason why we don't know what to make of this is because there's huge elements of this matchup that we really don't know. We can't predict. We can't predict if you tell me Buffalo is going to run for 150 yards, unlike what Miami did last week on the ground and keep control of the clock, it's easily Buffalo is going to win the game. Right. But we don't know. Yeah. They didn't run the ball last week at all.
That's the wild card. What I will say is this is going to be a great game. I really want to watch this one. It's Kyler and Josh Allen. We're going to see a lot of running quarterbacks. It's going to be, in my mind, at least it should be some kind of different offenses that we've seen in the past. I mean, these are two quarterbacks that are able to throw the ball, but really dynamic on the ground. So it should be really interesting, in my opinion. Mr. Model, who you got for your key pick, sir?
Yeah. Yep. All right, so I'm going to go Tampa Bay minus 4.5 against those Carolina Panthers. I'm doing this for three reasons and three reasons only. Reason number one, I'm looking at the market. So in the pool, we have locked in a line of 4.5. Currently, this line has already moved up to 5 in many places and even 5.5 in others. It means to me that a lot of the sharper players are going to be coming in on that Tampa Bay team. Reason number two, when I look at DVOA, I really like Tampa Bay, even with their performance last week. I think people will be, not thinking as highly of them. They are still the third overall ranked team in DVOA, 13th ranked offense, first ranked defense, whereas Carolina is all the way down at 19th, 8th ranked offense, 26th ranked defense. And the third reason, I think this is a saying that my friend Casley has created. You pick a good team coming off a loss, is something like that?
That is correct. A good team coming off a bad loss. That's a staple of mine.
And man, they had a bad loss last weekend, so I'm all over Tampa Bay minus 4.5 here.
Okay. Coulter, what do you got?
I have another best bet, but this was the other one that I was thinking of flirting with. And Tampa Bay, this could be the pick of the week because we've been kind of circling around this stuff. Just when they played the Panthers, what happened the first time? 21-0. They blew them right out of the water. So maybe this Tampa Bay team has a strategic advantage. And they've added Brown. Gronk is better than he was when they first played. And CMC is not going to be playing for Carolina. They've ruled him out. So we're going to get the best number in the pool of 4.5. I bet this closes at 6 or 6.5. I didn't list it as my best bet, but if anybody wants a crossfire, I definitely will take the Bucks. I love the idea of taking the good team coming off a bad loss. Everything points to Tampa on this one for me. I don't see how Carolina has any advantage here.
Hughes, you feeling in a little crossfire mood?
No, I'm in a tough spot on this one too, because I mean I'm in the max bet zone on this game. Tom Brady coming off a bad loss. I mean, I think I saw he had 2 fantasy points. He played as bad as he could have. The only bright spot for Carolina is when McCaffrey's in there. I feel like they start to get a little bit of a feel for what they could be. If he's out, I just don't see how this is even remotely a possible cover. I saw it at 6. earlier when I was kind of doing a little bit of research on some of the games that I liked. I love this bet for the Bucks, especially at 4.5. It's just total stealing. Anybody that got it early, I will say the only thing there is, like, does Vegas know something we don't? I mean, I know Teddy Bridge has done a good job covering, and he's had some sneaky games, but I just,
he's 33-11 against the spread.
I know. You guys got me on the Joe Burrow one last week too. I was heavily against Joe Burrow, and he not only covered but won. But, like, again, this could be one of those Vegas games where it just doesn't make any sense. And it's like, why is this game not 7.5 or 10.5? I mean, I don't even know. Like, I do not know what Vegas sees in this Carolina team necessarily without Christian McCaffrey going up against a Bucs team that is clearly going to be motivated and totally pissed that they got absolutely embarrassed on national television by their division rival in a game when I think they went in there thinking like they were going to put the Saints in the grave, and the Saints flipped it around Undertaker style. And here we are where now Tom Brady's got to fight for his life again. I do not like this game for Carolina at all. I've just talked myself into, if this game goes up to 9, I'd bet it at 9. It's out of control. Take the alternate line.
The only thing that's got my brain in a pretzel is that game against the Chiefs last week. And like you guys said, Teddy Bridgewater covers spreads. He's covering at 80%, which is the highest of any quarterback with the minimum of 20 starts. It's blowing my mind. Having said that, I'm on the Bucks. 4.5, it's too much. Seeing the market change, I can't do it. I can't pick with Teddy on this one. But I do like where your head's at, Hughes, because I think this is something like, what's going on with this number?
Chiefs are missing a top 5 defensive player in the league, and that is where once week 9 wrapped up last week, I hit my skull against my desk 50 times because there were so many things wrong with my card. Most importantly, Chris Jones out for Chiefs. The line didn't even really move. That was a great value pick on Panthers on a Sunday morning. That's a top 5 defensive player in the league, and he didn't play for Kansas City last week. As far as I know, Bucks are fully healthy on defense. Carolina is not going to have that advantage. They're going to be the ones at a disadvantage without McCaffrey. I think that game last week might be an anomaly. Carolina's played in a few of them. I don't want to discount it, but like, I don't know. I feel like it was just a cover, but I don't know if they necessarily were in the game, right? I was watching it. It seemed like Kansas City had kind of firm control on it. I know Sly had the kick at the end, but I don't know. It seemed to me that Kansas City had it, but I could be reading it wrong.
The Chiefs are playing this way every week. I just feel like some weeks they can light people up because they get rolling early. Some weeks they don't, and they're just like, fine, we'll just kind of putz along and win this game at the end. To me, it's like a Super Bowl hangover where, you know, like you feel good enough to have a couple of drinks and just kind of get back into it. And then, you know, by the time everybody's starting to party, you're fine. Like they just takes them a while to get going. It's weird. It's a weird team. I also feel like, yeah, there's just something about like you get a feel for games like this. To me, the algorithm clearly thought that Teddy Bridgewater is a cover machine and put it at 4.5. It's grown to 5.5 to 6 points because, again, you know, not everybody's like Kevin Cash and they only look at spreadsheets. They understand that there's a feel element to watching sports and betting sports. And this just feels like a game that Tampa's going to win big. Like it just doesn't feel like there's any way with McCaffrey out with what, again, maybe they've got some like momentum, but they also would love a high pick. I don't think this team is like trying to win this year. The Carolina Panthers are not in a position where they're like, we're going to make the playoffs and like do any damage. I think they're trying to figure out if Bridgewater's the guy going forward, you know, or at least for the near future, but they could end up with a top 10 pick. I don't know. I love Tampa in this spot, but I could be drunk on Tom Brady and the fact that it was 4.5 points and now it's only 6. It just doesn't make sense.
If we were on Around the Horn, Hughes, I'd give you a bunch of those little uptick points there at the Kevin Cash. That was real done. Well done. Okay, Coulter, give us your key pick here.
Yeah, I'm going back to the old coaching well again, and this is the team I faded in last week's best bet. Now they are my best bet. Welcome to the club, Miami Dolphins, -2.5. I think the line is light. Both of my lines, by the way, are they're Vegas insults. I mean, they don't want to give the Vikings the full 3, I understand, because they're on the road. But by saying that they're a favorite in that game, they're already saying they're better than Chicago. So I feel like they should just give it to them. Why not? And then here, what an insult to Miami. They just kicked the living crap out of the Rams, and then they beat Arizona on the road, and they can't get a full field goal against friggin' Anthony Lynn. I've got a coaching matchup here, Flores versus Lynn. I love this. I don't even need to keep talking. I honestly, I don't need to keep talking, and I know Herbert has been on a roll, but I just feel like that Miami secondary is going to clamp down Keenan Allen and all those no-name receivers, Mike Williams, And I just don't think Herbert's going to have much of a passing game. They've got all sorts of injuries to the running game. I don't trust that defense. Bosa's hurt. Why are the Chargers not a full field goal underdog here going across country? And I know that the NFL assisted by moving this game to four, which I effing hate them for doing. But, man, I still love Miami best bet, -2.5.
I'm glad you brought up the Chargers because I just want to recap the end of that game last week where Anthony Lynn, I granted he's not the calling the plays here, but he okayed a fade at the end of the game to win the game once to Mike Williams, who's your best like high ball receiver, fine. Then he decides to do it again, two plays in a row, to their backup tight end to win the game. You cannot pick with that guy. I'm in full agreement here. I was riding the Dolphins last week. I love the Dolphins this week, especially under a field goal. There's no way I'm picking with Anthony Lynn here. Sorry. I'm with you there, Coulter.
I'm like a par golfer. I'm playing this course so you guys don't crossfire me right now.
Exactly right. Make no mistakes. Hughes, what do you got in that game?
I'm coming with the crossfire. I want you to give a chance to win the money back. Two, I do not understand how this spread is not like 9 points. Like
for Miami,
when
right?
I first looked at it, I thought five. I was like, this game's gonna be 5 points. It's gonna be one of those weird lines. Like you could take it and the Chargers have kept every game close and just found a way to lose. This is a 2.5. Like it doesn't make any sense. So I'm going to go with the Chargers +2.5 only because it doesn't make any sense. Like, I just don't. I was on the Cardinals last week. I was on the Chargers last week. Both of them, you know, the Dolphins beat me. The Chargers broke my heart. I'm just going to ride on the ride again, and I'm going to take the Chargers +2.5. I'll do a crossfire. Let's see what happens.
That is a bold move, Hughes. Mr. Motto, are you joining?
No dice. No, thank you. I'm on Miami here after I got totally burned last weekend. Not much to say about this game. We'll be rooting for Tua just to perform and see his rookie season go well. Currently ranked, they're ranked 18th in offensive DVOA. Would love to see that continue. Their defense is already pretty good, 14th. Yeah, no, this one's just an absolute stay away from me.
I like the action there, Hughes.
Me too. I wrote Miami down. Miami's the better team, the better coach, the better everything. They're at home. Everything, every possible thing, if you made a pros and cons T-chart, would be on the Miami side. That's why 2.5, it doesn't make sense. I've been burned before. I'll roll the dice. Like, you know, I'm a craps guy. I'll roll it on this. I'll take the points.
Angry team than the Chargers right now. So, I mean, they definitely have to be fully motivated coming into this game. And clearly, I think Hughes is really hammering home that clearly this is a Vegas special line. And what Vegas is clearly telling us is they don't think Tua is as good as he looked last week. And that game is a fugazi. Because otherwise, this has to be five, to Hughes's point. If Tua plays how he did last week against Arizona, they're going to win this game. I mean, there's just no way. If he's competent and he can throw for 200 yards and run for another 50, 60, 70 yards and not turn the ball over, Miami will be fine.
I feel like a little bit of Matthew McConaughey, like where I'm just like, time is a flat, sir, whatever. Like, how does a team go on the road to Arizona against a playoff team, win, come home to play a team from the West Coast who has lost in every way possible and has found a way to lose in every way possible, coming to your building and you're only favored by 2.5 points? And oftentimes these are the ones where you look back on, you're like, why was I such an idiot? I should have put every penny I've ever earned on Miami. But I'm willing to roll with it because, again, it just doesn't make sense.
I don't know what to make of that one. I do want to throw one thing out there, too, and that's Brian Flores going up against the rookie quarterback. And I think for years what we saw was Bill Belichick taking advantage of rookie quarterbacks. And again, I'm with you, Hughes. It's like this spread should be much bigger here, so maybe Vegas knows something that we don't. Who knows?
I don't get it.
Well, I mean,
it has to be Vegas.
Yeah, Chargers are desperate, too. And Chargers are desperate, I think, and desperate and motivated. And I think Herbert's proved that he's a good quarterback. I think of all the things we've seen – you know, if anything's come out of this, is that the future of the NFL and the quarterback position, if these guys can stay healthy, like, I think everybody got a little doom and gloom, but like, we saw like a very steady pace of Manning, Roethlisberger, Brady. There's like 10 to 15 dudes right now that like could be a lot of fun. And like this league, right, I'm excited about it. I'm just excited to see these young guys play. Every week there's young men, there's guys that are playing well. We're not seeing the rookie quarterback just absolutely struggle and look terrible and hope that the running game can carry them to a couple wins. We're seeing guys go out there and pepper the ball around the field, and a lot of them are really young, and I don't think a lot of people saw this coming. So I will say that's the other fun thing that's going to be about this week is, like, again, we got another matchup of two young quarterbacks that are going to go out there and just see who's got, you know, the gumption this week to get a win. I love it.
Yeah. Great point.
Okay. This one's a public pick, by the way, just letting you know. I guarantee 85%. I mean, we've been kind of circling that with our whole discussion, but I guarantee it's 85% of the money's on tonight when it closes.
You're probably right on that one.
Can I ask one quick question of a game we didn't talk about?
Let's hear it.
Maybe we were planning on it. All right, so is Derek Carr – no, I mean, excuse me. Is Derek Carr – wait, is he a top quarterback? Is that even possible? I can't even say his name in the sentence, and I feel like this guy is – he's there. Like, this team is good.
They are the Rodney Dangerfield of the NFL this year, okay? They're not getting any respect. I know they're favored by 5.5 this week, I think, but I think you got to factor them in. I mean, not only have they been frisky, not only are they 5-3 – I think they're going to make the playoffs and be a contender.
He looks
contract good. Year, Hughes. It's a contract Fair. Year. Remember that well factor. Played. It's huge, colossal factor for the Derek Carr. Should have bet the Raiders over. We had that in the preseason. I'm almost positive I said it. That would have been a great over. They were, I think, 7. They're almost there.
Yeah.
And he's
never fade a quarterback in a contract year. That's a principle right there.
They want their money.
And a shunned receiver from Philadelphia. Nelson Aguilar's also looked great. There's been some great catches. I don't know. I it's so funny. Every time I watch Derek Carr, I'm like, there's no way. There's no way. And then I'm like, God, like, this guy's good. Like, yeah. I don't get it.
Playing really well. Great.
I like Vegas this week, too. That -4.5 of it.
Before we jump to our Masters talk, I got my key pick here. And I did a little bit more research. Went back to that research board, Mr. Model. You like that? A little birthday treat for you. I'm purely fading a team here, okay? And that team is the Texans. The Texans are 1-7 against the spread this year. In those 7 losses, they've lost by an average of 7 points. They're playing the Brownies at home. The Brownies are off a bye, and that spread is what? 3.5. And what we've seen from the Browns, hopefully, is they're getting Nick Chubb back. Nick Chubb is going to change the dynamic of that offense. I think what you're going to see from the Browns is a little bit more of what you saw in the second half of the game when Odell went down with an injury. And that's Baker not forcing the ball to players, but really just letting the game come to him. The Texans are giving up 5.1 yards per carry. Even if Chubb doesn't play, or even is playing in a limited role, they're going to run all over that defense. The Texans are going in the opposite direction. I don't think the Browns are necessarily a great team, but 5-3, I love them here at home. 3.5. But purely a fade of the Texans. What do you think about that one, Mr. Model?
Yep, full agreement from me. I love Cleveland to this spot, especially coming off the bye. When I look around at Beyond Stuff, not just DVOA, but Beyond to some other folks I follow who do their own power rankings, I see Cleveland, you know, ranked very highly. They are in number 10 spot overall, which I'm not necessarily sure I agree with. But Houston, all the way down in 28th. I just think these two teams are headed in different directions, and I like Cleveland in the spot, especially with some possible wind coming this weekend in Cleveland. So I wouldn't be surprised to see another lower scoring game.
Coulter, you teased us a little bit earlier. We haven't seen the Browns in a non-weather game. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm on the Browns, especially with the wind factor, because I think it's pretty obvious that David Johnson's going to be out this week, so it's going to be throw for Houston. Now, I'm going to just say this out loud on the pod, so it's marked and recorded. I'm on Cleveland, but isn't there a possibility that Houston just does a carbon copy of the Buffalo offense from last week and just throws the ball 55 times with Watson, and you're on the wrong end of having a quarterback matchup where it's Mayfield versus Watson, and you're just kicking yourself wondering, why did I end up with Mayfield in this one and not Deshaun Watson? With that said, I am going to take Cleveland, but there is a quarterback discrepancy here potentially. And I know there's been a lot of rah-rah about Mayfield and how he's been improving, but I'm going to take Watson every time over him personally. That's just me. And if just going head to head, but the rosters are, they're totally different. You're right. These are two teams that are heading in different directions. Houston is decaying. They're a carcass. They're terrible against the spread. And Cleveland is getting stronger. They're coming off a bye week. They're potentially getting their best player back. So these two teams heading in opposite directions. I got to go with Cleveland. I did want to mention the quarterback thing though, because there's the element of if there's no wind and Watson just decides, hey, I'm going to throw 55 times today, and he ends up connecting with Will Fuller a couple times, and it's Baker Mayfield playing from behind, and all of a sudden it's just like, why am I on Baker Mayfield in this situation?
Watson does scare me, but the Browns have pretty good secondary. They got Greedy Williams. They got Denzel Ward. They got a pretty good secondary. So, that's still
– Not according to what Joe Burrow did to him a few weeks ago.
Yeah, well, that's true. Hughes, what do you got in this game?
It's funny that the descriptions of this team, the Houston Texans, has absolutely hit exactly what I wrote down, which is Houston is dead to me, because ultimately this team just doesn't look like they want to be there, that they want to play with each other, for each other in any sort of way. They seem totally disconnected. And then I also think that what you mentioned, I think the Browns, if everyone is healthy, are one of the best running teams in the league. And I think, one, that's because Chubb is really good. But two, again, we didn't talk about Hunt. I think Hunt's really good, not only in the run game, in the pass game. I think getting Odell out of there, I think Odell Beckham's a great talent. I do think at times certain talents like that can clearly take away from a team that's trying to develop an identity with a new coach, with a new system, with a whole like just way that they want to approach the game. And it's not to throw the ball around. It's to, again, be a little bit more balanced and have a dynamic offense. So I really love Cleveland in this spot. I love the points. I think they win this one easily. I think this Houston team, and not to get into some of the stuff that's been spilling out through, what they've done in the, the front office and what they've done on the business side, the PR side. But it seems clear that, if anybody saw J.J. Watt's comments about the fact that they fired their head of communications, there's a disconnect between what's going on with this team and what the players are feeling. And I think that is hard for me to say it's going to matter in the game, because these guys are professionals, they're football players. But I don't see it right now. They don't have a coach long term. I think Romeo's doing what he can. I think there's a clear power struggle for, who's going to get to make the decisions going forward. And I think the Browns are on the right path. I think what we've talked about and what's been mentioned earlier is that this is a team that if they can avoid the Baker Mayfield games where he has to carry them, which I think is clear, he is not at the point where he can do. It's a really good team. And so I like the Browns here. I think they roll. I would say that Houston is a great team to bet against for the rest of the year.
Yeah. I mean, I did get burned last week with my fade picks against the Cowboys and the Jets, but I think this is a stronger fade here. So we shall see. Now, let's end with a few minutes on the Masters, because this is going to be a glorious, glorious weekend. And the benefits of this work from home is that we can watch all four rounds, which is even better. And on Saturday, we've got College Game Day at Augusta. And then on Sunday, the final round with NFL. I mean, I can't picture a better sports weekend than this right now. Hughes, who are some of the golfers you like? Maybe throw out one or two that you like here?
Yeah, so I will say the Breeders' Cup last weekend was a lot of fun. If anybody follows horse racing, if you like to gamble there, it was a blast. But yeah, you follow that up with Masters weekend. There are some plays that I really like, from the cream of the crop type of guys. I'm a Dustin Johnson fan. I think DJ, has got a really good shot in this tournament. I think there are a lot of people, from a betting perspective the value is not great. I mean, I think everybody's on DeChambeau, but I really like DJ. If you're looking for something that's a little bit longer, I love Morikawa. He's been a breakout star this year on the golf circuit. And I think it's one of those things where I think you can get him. I think I saw him at plus 8,000 or something like that to win the tournament. And I'm a Kisner guy too. So I'm going to roll with Kevin Kisner for first round leader. I think I got him at plus 4,000 to lead after the first round. There's just so many cool bets out there. If you do have the opportunity, wherever you guys are at to be in one of the states that offer some of these bets, but there's a lot of cool props and a lot of cool things out there. But I think it should be a fun weekend. I think honestly, the weather's looking like it's going to be pretty good. And really, for anybody who likes golf, seeing Augusta in the fall is going to be a totally different experience.
Got
a course that's entirely created on there being a different flower and or tree on every hole. And now we're going to get to see it where we've got 7 a.m. tee times tomorrow, I think, or 7:15.
Yep.
Going off the front and the back, because obviously it's going to get dark early for those of us who are hating daylight savings. So they've got to get this stuff in. We're on the Eastern, we're East Coast. So it's going to be a lot of golf early. To your point, it's going to be a lot of fun to be at home and get to watch some of this stuff. So I'm really looking forward to it. But yeah, my plays are Dustin Johnson, Colin Morikawa.
Okay. Coulter, are you going to roll with the favorite in Bryson?
Wait, Morikawa, just not to go over this. Did you say you saw Morikawa at 80-1, Will? Because I might have to send you some money to get down on that. That's amazing. He's 35-1 on where I'm seeing him.
Yeah, I got him at 35 as well.
So, I mean, if he's 80-1, that's a – I'll fly you the money. Honestly, that's a great bet.
Because
he's one of the five guys I'm playing this week. Yeah, I'm playing Colin. He's one of the guys – I like Jason Day to stay in the top 10. I think he's just Mr. Old Reliable. So if you're doing a top 10 or a pool where you're just trying to go for a score, I think he's going to be there in the end. Another guy off the top of the leaderboard who I think people are going to fade just because he's collapsed so much time, but he is by far and away top five most talented guy on the tour, Tony Finau. No one's going to play him. I'm going to play him. I would love that storyline to connect finally. He looked good last year. And then I have two other ones that I really like too. A long shot. Where is the guy's name? I'm drawing a blank on him offhand. I had him circled here. Where did he go? Oh, JT Poston. He is my long shot, 250-1 odds. Poston, I should say. He is a Southern gentleman. He's used to playing in that kind of weather, the climate. He's nearby. Another Southern gentleman near the top of the board who I think there's just good value on is Webb Simpson, top 10 golfer, 40-1 odds. So my picks are Day, Simpson. I like Colin, as we just said, Finau. I'm going to take a flyer on just because I don't think anybody's going to bet him because he collapses a lot. And then obviously the very long shot is JT Poston.
Okay. My top of the board guy who's lost some value, I'm going with Xander Schauffele. He is a consistent putter, like his ability a lot. I got my mini-ish long shot and one of my favorite names on the entire tour, Louis Oosthuizen. As Mike the Mad Dog would say.
I like that. He plays well.
He always plays well at the Masters. I mean, he's going to be in contention. He may not win, but at 6,500 or plus 65-1, I really like that. And then I'm going to give you kind of a middle of the pack guy here. I hate to do it, but you can't hate on Bubba Watson here at 30-1. I mean, he's won here before. I know he's been down a lot, but 30-1 at Augusta for Bubba, I don't hate it. And I mean, I'm going to be rooting for Tiger. How can we not? I mean, that would be incredible. I read some facts that the overlying with Nicklaus and Tiger this year is incredible. It's like it'll be 23 years after they won their first major. It would be Tiger's 16th major. It would be his sixth at Augusta. A lot of, funny coincidences here. So that would be fun to watch.
If he won the back-to-back, that would be the coolest moment of 2020. I'd be smiling for a whole week.
Oh, yeah.
So just to correct earlier, you guys are right. I got it at plus 3,800. In terms of Morikawa, but at the same time, also, I do think it would be it would be really cool for Tiger. I'm a little worried in terms of where he's been playing recently and kind of like how many tournaments he's gotten in. He had a nice lead up to the last Masters, and I think he was in kind of a primo spot. But yeah, it would be a lot of fun to see. Tiger, I do love that Fleetwood call out too. I think Fleetwood's a great play for anybody in terms of the number you can get him at. I think I saw him at plus 5,000, which again, 50-1 is anytime you can get that. And I love Finau too. It's going to be fun. I think it's going to be a cool thing to get to watch. I mean, anybody, again, depending on how diverse your betting opportunities are, whether you get to bet matchups or bet any of it, top tens, there's so much stuff out there. From a gambling
perspective.
There's
so many props. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's insane.
Finishing order is, it's insane.
Yeah.
I mean,
we did skirt talking about Bryson though. Should we just,
we got to do a little really bit. Quick? Yeah. Cause I mean,
cause there's the, we could talk golf for 45 hours and say, oh, we like this guy. We like that guy. But Bryson DeChambeau can just come out there and beat everybody's ass by four or five strokes and just clearly announce himself to everybody like, I am the man now. He has that opportunity in that platform. I wouldn't bet on it. I think that is awful odds for him personally at 8-1. I would stay away. But there is that possibility, which is a lot of fun too for golf. I mean, this could be like, if the U.S. Open wasn't a coming out party, this could be like the coming out party for him. So that's definitely a possibility for sure.
I mean, let's be honest, Koepka can hit it not as far as Bryson, but like Koepka's gotten pretty big too. And what I've always noticed about about Augusta is that you don't necessarily have to be that long. Like Augusta is a second shot, it's an approach shot type of course. And I mean, yeah, sure, if you're a lot closer and you're hitting a wedge in on almost every hole, sure, that changes things. But I don't know. I just think the guys that have a better shot at this are going to be guys with better iron games. And I just – 8-1 is not enough. But, I mean, who knows? He could be just putting balls on greens that we didn't see ever. You know, I mean, he could be hitting the ball in other holes just to have a better approach at the you know, coming back onto the green in the other hole. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sold. I'm anti – DeChambeau, just in general, in terms of like how I've followed
his personality.
I think again, there's a part of his approach. One, he complains a lot on the course. Like he complains about lies. He complains to officials. Like golf's a game. Like we've all played it. I assume like it's something that it has got to be infinitely difficult to figure out like how to be the best at it. He seemingly has tried to figure that out. And he's done things with his body, with his swing, with his clubs that have like put him in a position where I feel like he's just like he's testing too many like weird things. So like he's got a new driver this week. It's the longest driver that's allowed on the tour. We'll see if it makes a difference. But again, any of us have played, you know, drive for show, putt for dough. So we'll see how he can do again with the approach shots. And once he gets on the green, because that's what it's going to come down to. But you're right. He could easily come out here. And he's done this with some tournaments where he just kind of takes over and it does feel like he just can't hit a bad shot. And so, yeah, he's got the length where if that happens, it could be dangerous.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, this is going to be a phenomenal week of sports. There is a lot on the docket. This is a great episode. We put some picks out there. Hopefully we got some winners. Good luck to you boys. Let's cash some checks. Let's win some picks here. And we will see everybody next week on Double Down Trent.
Baby, look at me. Look at me. Your money, and you know what else? You're a big winner tonight. I want to leave. You're a big winner. I'm going to ask you a simple question. I want you to listen to me. Who's the big winner here tonight at the casino? Huh? Mikey, that's who. Mikey's the big winner. Mikey wins.
Fucking
all right, fine. I'm an asshole, but you know what? You're the big winner tonight, Mikey. You're the big winner in more ways than one.